Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive to HR. Well, in fact, that is an interesting music, which I love to hear every time when I log into Drive to HR, and I know we have been playing that for quite a while. And today we have a wonderful guest. Every time I talk to this person, she brings a smile on my face. So I'm sure those who are connected to her or know her personally would feel the same way. Without further ado, let me welcome our guest, Heather Bussing. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, we are excited to have you here again on Drive to HR. So, Heather, why don't you kick off with a brief intro to let our audience know who you are and what you do, and then we will roll on with what's on top of your mind.
Okay. Well, let's see. I'm Heather Bussing. I have many lives. In one of my lives, I'm an employment lawyer in California. I've been doing that for almost 30 years now. And I write a weekly sort of blog on the HR Examiner where I talk about different legal issues involving HR and employment law and technology and all sorts of things. And I run the editorial advisory board for the HR Examiner as well. And I'm also a teacher. I teach social media and internet law and advanced legal writing at an amazing school in Santa Rosa, California called Empire College School of Law. And I'm a photographer. And so, and a mom and a whole bunch of other stuff that doesn't have labels, I guess.
Well, that's exciting to hear. Employment law, HR examiner, teacher, photographer, mom, and many other things in your life. Well, what is keeping you up at night these days?
What's keeping me up at night? I guess the thing that I am interested in this morning is the idea of privacy as an app or as a technological feature. So one of, you know, the big buzz about Apple's OS 8 is how much it messes up your phone. But underneath that, they're doing something really interesting, which is they have made it impossible for themselves, for Apple, to get the data off an individual's phone or from their phone account at all. So until now, tech companies could always route around passwords to get information, and so law enforcement and people in civil lawsuits could subpoena it, or the government could send a warrant for it, and they would have to give it up. And so Apple changed all that yesterday with iOS 8. So they cannot get it. So if your stuff is backed up in the cloud into iCloud, they can find that and might have to reveal that with a warrant, but they can't get it off your phone, and that's a really big deal because until now we've been arguing about privacy as a legal right, and now we're looking at it as a technological issue.
Well, in fact, I also read that the article from Washington Post that said Apple will no longer unlock most iPhones and iPads for police, even with search warrant. So while talking about this, how this is going to impact the HR professionals, or let's just leave HR, the entire organization, from an organization point of view, when our social media team are sitting out there and broadcasting all the information about the organization, and nobody has a control over the privacy, right, at this point. So when Apple is coming up with this particular idea of locking the privacy settings, how this is going to impact and from an organization point of view?
Well, it makes it harder to get information. I mean, one of the things that HR has been able to do is ask for certain information, and if they have the accounts or they own the hardware, companies can search anything with, you know, they have an absolute right to do that. And what we're seeing now are technological features and technological ways that people can block that ability to see information.
So
it's going to be harder to get.
It is going to be harder to get. I mean, it's going to be tough for the HR professionals out there on a day-to-day basis in order to interact and come up with information and even take decisions, right? So from a legal point of view, what do you recommend going forward? How is this going to stay or is this going to change in the future?
Oh, I think you're going to see more. I think you're going to see incredible competition between software companies and hardware companies to provide the best security and to have encryption and to make it really difficult for anybody but you to get your data. And the tension there is that so many companies are harvesting data and using it and selling it and making data what they sell, you know, information based on the data that they can collect from devices. And so as we see the tension between people who want privacy and don't want to give their data away and are using technological mm-hmm. applications, and companies who offer free services and who run on the ability to collect data, we've got two really legitimate interests at loggerheads. So it's going to be fascinating to see what happens and how the market and consumers choose and where they decide that they're willing to pay for privacy and give up free everything. We're going to see a whole new wave of adjustments to business models and to approaches to data and privacy.
Indeed. Well, from a personal point of view, what do you think, as not as a third party, but as a Heather Buzzing on your personal life, who gets to control your data or probably your information that you have in your iPhone or iPad or iCloud or whatever we call it from a technological point of view?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I should have as much control as possible, but I'm also not willing to take the time all the time to read the terms of conditions and to read the privacy policies and to find out what my data is being used for or how it's being used or who gets it. And so I'm conflicted a lot of the time. You know, I really try to read terms of service and I think about what I'm doing a lot of the time, but it's at some point, you know, it's too much to manage. I mean, it's become privacy has become harder than throwing things away at Whole Foods. You know, I just can't keep it track whether it's compost or recyclable. and at some point, you just, you know, don't have any more time and juice to give it. So I think it's a hard question from an individual standpoint. There are some things that you absolutely, you know, want to take care with, which are your finances and your medical history and anything that you consider really truly personal and private. And those are the areas that the law generally protects. In the scope of privacy,
I know.
Anything in your home is generally considered private unless you let somebody in. And that's going to get interesting as we have drones who can fly right up to your window and take video.
I know, that is absolutely true. And when in fact, while we are using mobile for everything, like your day-to-day aspect, even if you wanted to control your weight loss, even if you wanted to have your calendar, or even
right.
if you wanted to shop, or even have a reminder, even do your mobile banking as well, all the passwords are in there. Your entire life is in there. So it is in danger when it comes to your data is being controlled by a matter of different privacy settings. What is a common man who isn't aware of all these advances that is happening in the technology point of view? If he doesn't know, okay, there is a new settings that I need to do in order to protect my data and passwords from all these hackers.
Right, right. I don't know. It changes every minute. You know, that's the problem. That's absolutely
that's
the problem
true.
is that every single one of these companies reserves the right to change the way everything works all the time. And so it's impossible for the consumer to keep up. And government's, you know, response is always to require notice and a long description of what they're doing and why they're doing it. And then the companies, you know, create these terms of service or these announcements that don't say very much and don't really explain what's actually going on. So I think it's really, really hard. You know, I'm a lawyer and I speak terms of service as a second language and I can't figure out half the time what's being said or what it actually means. And it takes a lot of time to do that if I really want to. So it's hard. It's really hard. But
absolutely.
But there's also sort of a fundamental issue involving what is ownable with data.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, generally the things that we do in public are in the public domain. So it's not going to be too long before the Supreme Court and other courts determine that what you do on the Internet is public, that the Internet, being on the Internet, is in public, unless you have done certain things to make it private. So, you know, unless you have taken care with your privacy settings and can show a clear intent that you did not intend your Facebook post to go out to anybody. And then there's an argument back that it's unreasonable to rely on privacy settings on Facebook or anywhere else because it changes so much. So it'll be really interesting to see how we redefine what is ours and what is our data and what is private. What do you think?
Well, that is an interesting segue that you have pointed out right there, from privacy to transparency. Well, in fact, we always talk about being transparent, providing information about who you are as a person or who you are as an organization, putting your personality out there, be it social media or be it in real life. But when you put any content on social media that you are giving that to your public to let others know who you are, what you do, what your daily life looks like, and what you value in your life. But as you said, if you put a privacy setting out there who or on a content which you don't allow the public to see, or probably your personal life to see, but still being who you are as a person, what you do as a person doesn't necessarily be different than what you do privately and what you do in a public platform, right? That's what I believe. My personal life with my family is, I know there is a personal connection, but whatever I do is that's what reflect as who I am as a person, right?
Right.
So that's what I would go for. But from an organizational point of view, as you said in the beginning, that is ownable data, right? Sometimes chances are there organizations make mistakes. So one of the reasons that I have seen is when it comes to social media or interactions on social media, organizations, they normally go for hiring the entry-level professionals who are right out of the college, who doesn't even know probably how to communicate, or not probably how to communicate, but doesn't even think the implications of what they are communicating on their social media platforms.
Right.
So what do you think are some of the tips and techniques that organizations should do when they know that they did a mistake on social media?
So the question is, how should companies handle people's missteps on social media?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to take, you know, it depends on what you're doing. You know, Maya Angelou has this wonderful quote, which is, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time. And so you know, I think people do show you who they are, and if you don't like that, you don't have to hire them. Within the bounds of discrimination law. But if you're doing a background check, people may have a legal right under the Fair Credit Reporting Act to correct misinformation, but by that time it's too late. You only get notified if you didn't get the job, which is kind of crazy. But I think mistakes in data and people relying on information out of context and people using data for discriminatory reasons as sort of a cover for discrimination based on race or gender or other things is going to become more and more common. We are collecting vast amounts of information. My guess is that most of it doesn't matter, but right now it's too early to tell because we're very busy designing algorithms to figure it all out. But the truth is, you still need a human being to ask the right question, and I think we're not always good at asking good questions. So I think companies need to take what they see on social media with a grain of salt. They need to be very, very careful if they decide to run social media checks that they're complying with the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And I think that if you're looking for a job, you know, be careful about, you know, what you show in public. That's totally true. You know, there are also people who say, look, I'm going to be exactly who I am, and that's my filter. So if you don't like exactly who I am, I don't really want to work for you. And I think that's a legitimate approach as well, completely. So it just depends on what your own boundaries are and what you want to do and what environment you are trying to come into as a new employee.
Absolutely. Well, one of the points that I really wanted to talk over the Drive Through HR with you is your new post about dealing with unexpected truth,
yes.
Where you kind of advising the companies on letting them know what to do when any sort of misrepresentation or misinformation is happening, the steps that an organization should do in order to probably rectify that or to take a stand on that and own that mistakes. So
right.
Where should organization get wrong when it comes to, in the first time, they kind of understanding or knowing that they made a mistake? the immediate action? What is that immediate action that you have seen? They're doing it wrong.
Well, until social media, until Twitter, there was some way to manage information because it didn't go out in public and it wasn't spread immediately over the internet. You know, you could manage the press. You could manage what was said from the company. And that is just no longer true because everybody can publish anything at any time. And so the whole dynamics of information management are changing. And you're not able to control. There is no control. So you have to start with that as the baseline. There's no controlling what comes out. The information will come out, the truth will come out, misinformation will come out, and the longer you are denying it or investigating or making misstatements, the longer the drama will happen, and the sooner you can deal with the situation and resolve it in a useful way, the sooner it will go away. I mean, I have something called the 2.7-second rule. And the 2.7-second rule is that people will think about whatever your problem or your drama is for 2.7 seconds before they go back to thinking about themselves. So even though we freak out about saying something wrong or doing something embarrassing, nobody else cares after about 2.7 seconds. And so if you manage drama quickly, if you manage information or mistakes quickly, and you own them and you figure out how to make it right, it will go away. It will go away. And it's the right thing to do from a practical level. It's the right thing to do from an issue of ethics and integrity. And it'll save you a ton of money in legal fees and damages down the line. So
I know.
So that's what the two articles this week were about.
That is absolutely an interesting article. I loved reading about it. And like every other article that you have read, that you have written before. All right, so we have been talking. So we have been talking so many serious issues that are happening in the HR industry, technology industry, and in life as well. So let's loosen up a little bit, talking about your great work at Human of War. I know. I've gone through your photographs that you have posted on your Facebook pages, and you have this innate nature of capturing the lines, and especially the lines, which I totally admire. So talk to us a little bit about the Human of Work, your new project, what it is all about, and what was the inspiration for you to kick off that project?
Well, I'm really excited about this. This is something that I've been thinking about for a long time. You know, John Sumser deals a lot with HR technology and the vendors, and so I'm always learning about how technology is affecting us, and I have just learned a tremendous amount. And I'm dealing with it too in my legal practice. But what I see happening is that the technology is becoming the work itself. That we spend so much time dealing with updates and learning the software, and just when we get the hang of it, they change the interface, and you know they drop new operating systems on our iPhone that erases all our shortcuts, and you know. It's amazing how much time and energy we devote to managing the technology. And so I started thinking about that, and I started wondering how that affects the way we approach our work and how that affects the way we think about things, because technology is all based on logic. It's based on rules and algorithms that are not necessarily straight linear, but they are based on specific rules, specific questions, specific exceptions, and it's a closed universe. I mean, it's a very large universe, but it's still a closed universe. And computers do not make the connections that human beings do with art or music or our interactions. So I'm exploring through photography and just talking to people how that's changing. So I'm doing a photo shoot tomorrow at a local bakery called Wildflower Bakery. It's in Freestone. It's down the hill from where I live. And it is about as artisan a place as you can get. And they're one of the few places that I have seen anywhere that do not have a keyboard at work. They have a cash register, but there's no keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
So wow. Just as you go out into the world, see if there is any place that you encounter where there isn't a keyboard. It's really difficult to find. I'm exploring this idea, and I'm trying to highlight the humanity and the art and creativity and the uniquely human aspects of our work, and how that's shifting and what's happening as this very linear and logical technology overtakes us. And I think it's going to be an interesting transition, and I think we will find the limits of technology, and they won't be at all where we think they are, what it looks like. And so I want to follow that as it happens. So that's what I'm doing with photography. I just launched the website this last week. It's called humansofwork.com, just the way it sounds. And the name is a tribute to Brandon Stanton, who is the photographer for Humans of New York. And I just think he is absolutely amazing. And the work that he's done with photography and talking to people about the things that matter to them has just been astonishing. And I think it's one of the best uses of the Internet ever. So the name is a tribute to that.
Well, it is. Well, going through your photographs, we can see that. In fact, sometimes it is really fascinating to know what we haven't noticed and what just went away in front of our eyes, which we haven't had a chance to notice it, right?
Right. Right.
So this is so awesome. Well, Heather, as always, I was saying, it's so exciting and happy journey. I wish you all the best and look forward to seeing your great work. And thank you so much for joining with me today at Drive-Thru HR and sharing your lunchtime and giving us a thoughtful insights on how to move forward when we face a difficulty when it comes to valuing what comes first, life or technology. Well, Heather, where can people connect with you and get a hold of you?
Yeah. The best way to get a hold of me is to send me an email at heather.bessing@gmail.com. And check out humansofwork.com and the HRExaminer.com.
Alrighty, so let's wrap up the show with a happy song that for the person who makes me happy, that is Heather Buzzing. And thanks, Heather, again to our audience.
I don't care, baby. by the